It's Mardi Gras time in Sydney, and on Radio National, that means it's time to hit the library. We're joined now by State Library of New South Wales librarian Sam Cooling. This week, Sam presented Querying the Catalogue, a public discussion about getting the most out of the LGBTQIA plus collections at the State Library and some of the challenges that that poses. And it's been a busy week for Sam because they also hosted an event at the library called Queer Sydney, Lost Spaces, Living Stories. Sam Cooling, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thanks very much, Julian. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you. Could you give us a sense of what's in the State Library's LGBTQIA plus collections?
Oh, a sense. Oh, how do I even start? I mean, we have very extensive collections here, thanks to a long period of decades worth of intentional collecting from people in community, from some incredible librarians going back to the 80s and before. An important thing to note about the State Library is beyond what you think of as your local library with your books, we have an incredible collection that we focus on original and unpublished materials. So we have what we call manuscripts, paper records and archives, letters and diaries, and all these original materials created by people from organizations, historians, writers, creatives, artists. And then we have pictures and photography and audio recordings like oral histories. And then ephemera, like all those little flyers that get handed out that have the names of a party that only happened once in 1982.
But there's a librarian collecting them?
Absolutely. Or community members that collect them and send them into the library, or librarians going out to collect them, maps and plans. And there's such a wealth of collections, so much content for researchers to come in. And anybody, actually, anyone can come on in and have a look at these things, search for these things in our catalogue, come and have a look.
It's a really rich archive. I was interested to hear your reference there to when these collections started to be curated in that particular way. And I gather one of the unsung heroes of what's now called the LGBTQIA plus collection is Margie Byrne. I wonder if you could unsung Margie's contribution for us, please.
Yeah, well, it's a good person to note. Margie's an incredible, I think of her as one of my queerbrarian ancestors. Sorry, Margie, if that was a bit dating you. She was a former Mitchell librarian here in the late 80s and early 90s, and then continued to work at the National Library, has done some incredible things. Her and then a lot of her contemporaries and people after her, all the way up to people working there today, but realised there was a big gap in our collections, particularly around after the 1970s gay liberation movements and activism here in Sydney, New South Wales, and then particularly in the HIV/AIDS epidemic and the incredible things and traumatic, horrible things happening during that time, but that there was real import to be representing our community, representing LGBTQ plus people in the archive here. And so I think a result of the diverse and incredible collections we do have today, and we continue to work on, continue to collect, is a result of all these individual librarians that work in this space that have been passionate about their community or about finding those gaps, about making sure that previously underrepresented communities, including First Nations people and culturally linguistic diverse people, these minority groups that often have been underrepresented in our collections, filling those gaps and making sure that this library does collect for representative of New South Wales as a whole and not just the dominant group of the time.
We're speaking with New South Wales State Library librarian Sam Cooling on Sunday Extra. And Sam, I love a library and I love a pun. So Querying the Catalogue is a great title and you had me right there and then. But I'm interested also in the issues that you explored in that discussion and the role of language in some of the challenges that come with trying to examine archives when, as we know, language evolves. And as indeed the State Library's website notes, language and terminology have been used to cause harm to LGBTQIA plus people. How does the library deal with the challenges of changing language conventions? And also, what does that mean in practice for users of the collection?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it is quite complex. A lot of that changing historical terminology is relevant when you're looking for material. We also, pre-decriminalization, you can follow that we would hide things a lot more. Things weren't able to be as open. Things weren't able to be as collected and then find their way into the State Library. Even if people did leave that physical evidence, it would be very hidden for safety, for many, many reasons. So even the existence of things is going to be difficult to start or have a more of a limited run. But then the ways that we describe ourselves now are completely different to even 5, 10, 15 years ago. Yeah. So it's really actually even more important sometimes for our queer collections to be thinking about these terms, how they've changed over time and how that influences what we search for And especially in a library catalogue, I mean, we're so used to throwing something into Google. And as you throw in LGBT and assuming that anything is related to anything you might want with any combination of the acronym, it's not quite the same in libraries in the way that things have been described. And then also complications about applying current identity terms to historical people who didn't necessarily use those terms.
Yeah.
There's no definitive answer, but it just brings a whole new level to when people are researching about what they're considering and what terms you're looking up and what list of sometimes practically cringy in a modern sense, list of terms that you have to come up with, but it's a meaningful way into the content.
Absolutely. I must say, I looked at the handout that went along with the querying the catalogue session, and it seemed to me that a lot of the advice that you were giving and the tips there are just good advice for anyone who's dealing with an archive. I mean, think broadly and critically about what terms you're using, diversify your search techniques. These are all important issues to deal with at the threshold, because obviously, if you don't look in the right way, it's going to shape what you find.
Absolutely. I mean, at its core, I am a librarian and we love our search strategies and love just encouraging that thinking critically about what you're trying to find and why. Those kind of grassroots, the foundational way of approaching information seeking is the core of my profession. I just happen to be very interested in queer history to use those skills in organizing information to apply and benefit to my community, to our path, to uncovering that and to preserving it into the future.
Yeah, and you've talked about some of the inevitable challenges that come with the historical record and the fact that homosexuality was criminalized for a long time. That inevitably is going to shape what records existed, how they were kept, who they were kept by, and to what extent they're discoverable today. Could you maybe tell us a little bit more about some of the gems of the collection, the artifacts that have been able to be preserved and some of the stories that go with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to pick any one particular gem. You can have a look into those through the website, but I suppose from a personal story of some research that I've done recently, I was looking into some of the queer and trans and gender diverse stories in the PIX magazine, which we have an exhibition here at the library at the moment.
PIX was a pictorial magazine that ran from what, the late
1938 to 1972.
Yeah, so an extraordinarily rich visual archive.
Incredibly. And what we have from a bequest that we received from that publishing company, effectively, we received just hundreds of thousands of photo negatives. And the information on them, effectively, for a lot of them, was just an envelope with maybe the name of the photographer, if you were lucky, and maybe a date or very limited information. So I realized when I was finding these stories that some of these images that we had of what I would now call trans people in the archive, of queer people, of drag performers from the 1940s, we have them digitized, we have these images. But until you do the research, there was no tag, nothing that related in our catalog to these topics, to who these people were or linked with the LGBTQ community, because that research hadn't been done. That was just one of those limitations of the way we acquire things. So it was really phenomenal for me to be able to then look at these black and white photo negatives from 1941 of, say, a person I would now use the term trans man or trans masculine person, and look at them just being themselves and then finding research onto them. And then I can also now submit that research and that information to our cataloging team to improve the records, so that when someone does look for things like that in our catalog in the future, they will find it. And this is some of the beauties of those overlaps of research, of access and collection and discoverability that we can keep improving on as librarians, and that library users can submit and tell us about as well from the results of their research.
Sam, as I said, you've had a busy week. You also hosted the discussion about lost queer spaces in Sydney. What's driving those losses, and what were the highlights of that conversation for you?
Yeah, we had an incredible group of panelists that I was really grateful to host. Maeve Marsden, who's a writer and theatre producer from Queer Stories, is one of her main projects over the last 10 years, but she does many other things. We had Joy Ng, who's the owner of The Bearded Tit, a lesbian bar in Redfern that closed at the end of last year. And Graham Aiken, the bookshop manager, buyer for a long term for the bookshop in Darlinghurst on Oxford Street, which also closed at the end of last year. And the incredible Jamaica Moana, co-creator of Westball out in Western Sydney and a rapper. And just, oh, if you haven't found her before, look her up. She's incredible. She did a performance for us. So we had this incredibly diverse group of people speaking. And especially, I suppose it was prompted a bit, the discussion by the recent closure of the Bearded Tit and the bookshop and what that looks like, what that means. But it was just a very informed group of incredible individuals. The diversity in our panel of speakers there was one of my highlights. I created some steering questions and discussing our past and what that means for our future and imagining that. Some of the highlights, I think, was having this open discussion, de-hierarchizing whose responsibility it is to run these spaces, whose responsibility it is to remember them or do them in the future, and spreading that out, opening the floor to talking about why spaces are important, but what they look like over time. Sydney's history pre-decriminalization, particularly from the 20s or further back, queer people took up public spaces. There was balls and dances and things in town halls and in community centres across the city. And evidence of those kind of things is preserved somewhere like the library. But as things then changed to more commercial spaces and Oxford Street and all of the glitz and glam of Mardi Gras, but then discussing also, well, where are we going from here? Is a space ever really lost? As the capitalist environments and commercial nature of businesses change, our spaces will change with that. But I liked our discussion that we were more questioning, not viewing a lost space as a failure. Our spaces are really important, but like a relationship, when it ends, does that mean that it's a failure because it didn't live forever? Maybe thinking about what these next steps are and how we can continue this conversation about both finding the evidence of how we have always existed and we will continue to, and that we will adapt and that we will find those next steps. And we will talk about that hopefully between the generations, between locations, between cultural backgrounds, and include all of our different letters in the alphabet here and think about that diversity and that inclusion and intersectionality.
Sam, I wanted to ask you about the way that members of the community engage with libraries in terms of handing over their collections. Are bequests and donations an important part of building the State Library's collection?
Yes, they are, absolutely, as a broader term. I think for our LGBTQ collections, potentially even more important is our own community connections and people's awareness that the library is a space and their own passion and interest in preserving our history in that way. There's been active drive from librarians here in their community. Honestly, a lot of it is people that happen to work at the State Library in their community, talking with their friends and their colleagues and their peers and our connections in our community. And I think there's a lot to be said for that awareness that this is a resource, this library, for preserving New South Wales history, which includes all of us. It includes our queer history. And that is a government-funded, stable, temperature-controlled archive that people can access, that you can come in and see these things, and that it's our responsibility to take care of these materials. Community plays a huge part in developing these collections, we're always so grateful of the incredible things that people reach out to us with. These incredible generosity, but also the value of these documents and these items that aren't preserved anywhere else, that we can offer a space for, that we can have that discussion. It's really invaluable in the way that community can get involved. From the view of a cultural institution that's held by the state government, the remit of this library is for the people of New South Wales, and that includes us. And I want to invite my community to know that this is a resource. And I think we should take up space in these places, both in our collections and physically. We should use these and be represented.
And Sam, look, I do not want to sow discord amongst the archivists and librarians of any community, let alone yours. But I was noting that, obviously, as you've said, the State Library is a public library. It's a government institution. There's also the Australian Queer Archives at queerarchives.org.au, which describes itself as a volunteer-run, non-profit, community-based incorporated association. What if you could speak a little to the relative values of, if you like, community-led organisations, but also the importance of state institutions being a part of preserving these histories?
The queer archives are incredible. Queer library and archive spaces, it's relatively small. My view is that these are all resources that people can choose where their material is going. The queer archives have that larger remit of Australia-wide. Some people I've spoken with would prefer, especially if their materials are about Sydney, they would like them to remain in Sydney, in New South Wales. I don't like to tell anyone that one space is better than the other. The queer archives has been formed over a long period of time with incredible people behind it, and it's really lucky as well that Victorian government has gotten behind that. So that's sometimes, though, that the considerations on that wider thing of you know, more of a community archives versus a government-funded space is more the longevity. Sometimes the things that can be frustrating about the slowness of government also means that you can be a little bit more comfortable in the fact that it's not as dependent on individuals or funding, but there's positives of all of these different kinds. I happen to work at the State Library of New South Wales and I love working in my collections, but I wouldn't say you need to bring your things here because that's not how these things work. But I think we all are part of that wider collecting and preserving, and we're all committed at the end of the day to the same passion to preservation of our materials and to making them available for research into the future.
Delightfully said. Librarian and diplomat Sam Cooling, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
I am paid by the New South Wales State Government.
Sam, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thank you so much, Julian. Have a great one.
That's Sam Cooling, librarian at the State Library of New South Wales, who ran the sessions on Queering the Catalogue and Queer Sydney, Lost Spaces and Living Stories this week at the State Library of New South Wales, and talk about the evolution of language. Sam also describes themselves as a queerbrarian.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.